And now, WCOM presents Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater, The Arts and Something More, with your host, the internationally renowned poet, actor, artist, chef, raconteur, and friend of the working girl, the one and only Claudio.
Love them working girls. Yes. Do you know they come right up to the car, man, when you're driving through neighborhoods?
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Love that. Great attention. Good morning, Bob. And we also have my friend Bill McClymont at the helm here. I know he wants to be low profile, but I'm going to give him away anyway. Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the show. I'm going to dig into your mind about the typical history I pull out of you. He's a real history buff. But he's also the president of the Apex Arts Council, which happens to be my underwriter. So, hey, I'm getting that plug in all at once.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
So thanks for tuning us in. And I know you've got a few little journeys you want to take us on with things that are happening with the Arts Council. But how about we touch on some of the stuff that's going on outdoors currently. Like, what is this, the Obama skeet shooting doll?
Yeah, this is something that has come to my attention recently, and that it really does exist.
I thought you were joking when you told it to me on the drive-in this morning.
Some toy company has now produced the skeet shooting Obama doll. This is in response to the photograph that of our president out there on the range. The doll has his little white T-shirt and his little shotgun, and you can buy it and not take it out of the original packaging, bury it in a trunk, and someday your great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren will make $10,000 at it by pawning it someplace.
I wonder how this is playing into the gun lobbies.
I don't know, but it's it's just kind of humorous that our culture does things
amazing.
Like this. You know, we've got a very strange culture here. But, yeah, the skeet shooting Obama doll, that's one of the...
You had brought up something very interesting, too, about adoptions. There was an interesting note there. Where did you hear about this?
Well, I was at a lecture, was it Saturday evening, in Holly Springs. The Holly Springs Arts Council did a fundraising gala. And they had an artist on there, and the artist was originally from Mozambique, raised in Rhodesia, now Zaire, and now here in the United States. I mean, absolutely incredible.
Somebody we're going to have on my show at some point.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to bring him. I've already spoken to him about it. And he got to talking about, mostly to the parents of the children in the area, about letting the children find their own thing. Don't read your own values into your kids. Don't force them into something that you were incapable of doing. Let them find their own. And that got
into... Or don't make them like you in many ways.
Right. And that got into talking about the feeling of Africa toward the United States. And he says, you know, everybody thinks Africa hates the United States. And on the surface, there's a lot of negative. But we love you because you support us. You're the goal we want to do for. But think about the way things work here. United States is always very, very wonderful about adopting African children, Asian children.
Russian children, we used to.
Everything. How many white children are ever adopted into black Asian families?
Interesting point.
You don't see that. And what is it that causes it? I mean, even in this country, I mean, I've heard of it. I've actually met one, a child that was adopted into a black family. But is this a buried form of prejudice that we don't know about? Is this something? It just was an intriguing way that he brought it up. And as I say, I mentioned to you this morning on the way here, and it just seemed very interesting.
I tried to get myself adopted, but they left me to the whiteys, man.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
You're unadoptable.
I just thought that was an interesting point. Yeah. How many white children get adopted into African families? I never even gave it a thought.
You were kind of adopted into there back when in your days in the islands, weren't you, with King Obstinate?
Oh, there's a point. Yeah, I was running Bluebeard's Castle, the chef of Bluebeard's Castle in St. Thomas, back in '77, and was a white man from South Africa during the time that there was a lot of unrest in South Africa, running an all black kitchen in the Caribbean. So it was an interesting time, but I don't think they ever realized my skin color. I just sort of blended in, became part of them. They took me home to meet their families. I ate their goat heads and everything they were serving.
Well, I mean, nobody notices your polka dots, so it's
good. But you were talking about did you mention King
Obstinate? King Obstinate, yeah.
I would do after an evening of cooking in the kitchen, my way of relaxing was to go up to the piano bar, and there was this famous pianist named Nat Blake, very famous in the Caribbean. And I would join him by telling some of my stories with him backing me up on piano. Well, one night, the place was really packed. My little storytelling was starting to catch on. And, of course, Matt Blake drew a big crowd anyway. And I went into a piece that I very Edgar Allan Poe inspired. And after the recital, this one guy gets up in the middle of the room, big black gestalt, goes, "Claudio, I want you on the radio." And I looked over and I said, "Well, thank you, sir. And who might you be?" And the whole place cracked up like I just insulted Elvis Presley. Like, "You don't know who this is. I just got into the, you know, I hadn't been in the Caribbean for more than a month." And turns out he was a Calypso legend. He'd been on the Mike Cross Show. I'd actually seen him on the Mike Cross Show stateside. But he was a big Calypso legend. And he nicknamed me the African poet. I co-hosted his show. And it was the closest I ever came to tasting true fame. I was known all over the island. I could never buy my own drinks. I could have been a drunk and it wouldn't have cost me a dime. I mean, I had to turn, literally had to turn drinks down no matter where I walked in. Taxi drivers would pull up alongside on the street and say, "Come on, poet, jump in. I'll give you a ride. I owe you anyway for a performance, blah, blah, blah." So it was a beautiful time. But
so you were adopted.
I was adopted. And very, very, the beauty of it is I don't think anybody ever made a point of me being white. I know that I don't. You know,
what's the difference anyway?
Didn't have no control.
People's
man.
People. Yeah. Doesn't matter who you are.
So, yeah, that's that tune.
Yeah.
Anyway, how'd we get off on me?
It's your show.
Let's go back to what's coming up with the Apex Arts Council.
I know Apex Arts Council. We have all kinds of fun stuff. And, of course, the big thing with the Apex Arts Council is our big show of the year, which will be coming up on Saturday, the 20th of April, and that's Artists for Animals. Artists for Animals is a large show. It's held at the Clower Family Vineyard in Apex. We have artist tents there. They'll be showing off their work. The painters, the sculptors, some of the high art crafters. It'll be available for viewing, available for purchase. We will have live music going all day.
Give us some a website link to this.
Well, you go to the Apex Arts Council website, www.apexartscouncil.org. Apexartscouncil.org. You just go there, and right at the top of the page, you're going to see a header that says Artists for Animals. Click on that, and it'll tell you all the details, how to get there. And
I think
all
it was
stuff.
one of the most successful things that the Arts Council ever did last year.
We had
right?
120 artists last year, and about 600 visitors that came through.
Fantastic.
Now, but the key to this, though, is why do we call it Artists for Animals? Well, we call it Artists for Animals because after we pay all the bills and whatever is left over, the profit that's left over, we take half of that and donate it to animal rescue groups.
And I thought it was because we were all animals.
Well, that's your opinion of artists. That's okay. Some of them are.
I love animals.
Yeah, but we donate it to animal rescue groups. And, of course, being at the Clower Family Vineyard is important because we have to let the animals know. So we will have the Clower has sheep and cows on the property and
we
chickens.
We have to let the animals know,
of course, that we're helping them.
Ah,
you know, okay. We have to let them know, and they want to appreciate the art as well.
And we have
rescue groups that will be there. We'll have Paw Prints Animal Rescue there. They'll have puppies and kittens ready for adoption and ferret rescue groups.
Say, look, that goat is eating my painting. It loves the art.
We are even having Carolina Tiger Rescue there. They're not bringing a tiger. Tigers are NARC portable. But they will be there with their tiger transport van, and if you want to get in the cage and have your photograph taken in the tiger cage, feel free. We had a lot of people do that last year. And we, like I said, live music going all day.
All day being from when to when?
All day being from 10 o'clock in the morning till 4 or 5 o'clock, probably 4 o'clock in the afternoon. In between all these musicians and such, we're going to have some poets reading. I think you're going to be reading for us at least something.
Yes, I think my arm's been twisted in that direction.
Yeah, if it hasn't, I'll make sure I do it after the show. Maybe during the show. I don't know.
There we go.
We'll do it. But that's going to be the big thing. Again, this is going to be Saturday, the 20th of April, and definitely want to come out. And, of course, we end at the Vineyard. We have the Vintner's Art. So if you want a little taste, just go on inside and enjoy. We'll have food there. We'll have ice cream there. And with any luck, we'll have beautiful sunshine like we have here today in Carrboro.
You did last time, right?
We did last time. I ordered it special. It's on the. Hey. I put in my order early, so we'll see what happens. But that's the Artist for Animals Fair, and of course, there's a couple other events. You want me to do all the events now? You want
well,
to?
Well, no. Let's. I was going to say, let's take a little musical interlude all and right. have Bill give us a little something
Sounds
to think about.
Sounds good.
And we are here. Yeah, we've been here all along, just catching this tune. I'm kicking back, try to see if I can call Cheech and Chong, but they're not answering.
So, you know, you wanted to talk about some cultural things. We have an interesting one
today. I don't
want to
talk about no cultural things, man. That's just highfalutin, baby.
Today is Darwin Day.
Ah, oh, yes, you have an interesting point to make there.
It is. It's Darwin Day.
That ain't all, so don't put your hat on yet.
Oh, Darwin is big. This was his birthday. Darwin was born in 1809 on this date. Now, you want to really riddle some things in here? Riddle me the karma and astrology with this. So was Abraham Lincoln. The two men were born on the same day, in the same year, just 4,000 miles apart.
Which one was born at night?
Well, I think Darwin always said he was born at night. But the point is that, you know, here you've got two people who are they similar or are they
not
similar?
That's pretty amazing.
But,
I
mean, they're
no
both
idea.
Born on the same day in the same year. This was so
one good. Was a know-it-all and the other one became president.
Yeah,
I just killed it, didn't I? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Just which one is which is what I was trying to think.
Get on the mic, boy.
But it just find that very interesting.
That is pretty fascinating. I would never have connected those two dots.
Yeah. So
takes a historian.
Well, historian who watches such things, but that's it. And then of course the last one, my little cultural things that I can put up here. Do you know that some casinos now in Las Vegas are offering Botox injections?
This was another one I couldn't believe I was hearing.
And this is not for beauty, although maybe it
might. And this is true, folks. What he's telling you is true.
You can go there and get your Botox injection so that you can keep your poker face on the off chance that that may help you win a hand once.
Is there any step deeper we can take in the name of vanity?
I don't know, but this is, you know, a fascinating culture where half of the world is running around without clean water, without in dire poverty, and here we are going to Las Vegas and getting the Botox so he can sit there looking flat-faced and try to win a hand of poker. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
I just think this is
next. Fascinating. Amazing.
Yeah, so next time you're in Vegas, you can get your Botox and clear up
that'll
all
be
that,
the day,
that,
right.
that stuff there.
You had some other events to point to.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we've got one... actually, it's a double event here. International Bluegrass Music Association, the IBMA, has been around for 20 years, and every year they hold a big event in Nashville, or have done it in Nashville. This is their annual World of Bluegrass Convention, and then they hold an internationally televised award show, which is the International Bluegrass Music Awards. Well, somebody has convinced them to come out of Nashville this time, and this year and in 2014, 2015, they will be holding the World of Bluegrass Conference in Raleigh. So we will have it. That'll be the last week of September.
I have heard that this was happening. Yeah.
So
I think it's at the convention center.
Well, the conference is at the convention center, and most people would not want to go to that because that's very boring, and it's like $500 or something to
Yikes.
Register. And yeah, it's a trade show, but there'll be two others. There will be some concerts around in the area, and also the award show will be internationally televised from Memorial
Auditorium
in Raleigh. So that will be there. Well, all of the arts and culture groups in the state, this is a statewide event, are being encouraged to promote this by scheduling events. And Sunday, the 24th of February, which is what, next week or the week, 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks from now. The Chatham County Historical Association is kicking this off. We will be at the Chatham Memorial Library in Pittsburgh at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And this is free, by the way, folks. If you want to come out, it's just free. Just come on out. And we will be hosting a history lecture on the history of bluegrass music in North Carolina from 1930 to year 2000. And the
wonderful.
The speaker, singer, who's going to talk and sing us through this is a gentleman by the name of Tommy Edwards. And any bluegrass aficionado in this area will know Tommy. He's internationally known. He has a radio show of his own on another station in Sanford.
What is he known for?
He is known for bluegrass one of his famous pieces. I'm going to screw up the name. Is something about my tears keep spoiling my aim.
Okay.
That sort of relationship breaks up.
That sort of reminds me of the one. I think it's a country love song. I said I've got tears in my ears from lying on my back crying over you.
Yeah, something like that. But so if you want to come out, that'll be the 24th of February, 2:00, Chatham Memorial Library, and it's all free. Come on out and listen to Tommy and listen to the rest of it.
Are there any websites or point of contact?
You can go to the Chatham County Historical Association website, chathamarts.org, and you'll see some stuff there about it. But just show up. We love to have you.
Good.
The more the merrier. So, and then...
what else you got there?
Well, I got one other thing.
You got a list. I'm
going to
let you ramble through it.
Well, one of the things is something that you did recently.
What was that?
That was the your latest movie review. For those of you who don't know, Claudio writes movie reviews, and we post them on the Apex Arts Council website.
Film and art reviews, yes.
And, film and art, other things here. And you did
and
a
I,
review.
The nice thing is I get to pick them randomly, so I could be writing a review about Dr. Zhivago or something that just happened.
So send him an email. Tell him that what ones you'd like to see him review here. Send him the CDs. I don't know.
That's ClaudioArts.com.
Yeah. And you just did one of a movie called My Week with Marilyn.
My Week with Marilyn, which I fell in love with. And for some reason, it's gotten really bad reviews on the internet. Nobody seems to like it, and it actually has a storyline. It's not a whole bunch of shoot 'em up and bang, bang, and I'm stuck on story. So
yeah.
I liked it.
So anybody who goes to the Apex Arts Council website, take a look at the review section, and you'll see my good friend Claudio and his reviews of that. And there's some other films in there, too, and a wonderful review of Ray Bradbury's career and a few other things. So.
Ray Bradbury was a personal friend. So I what I did is I took all of the titles to all of his books as part of my language in Exalting the Man.
Yeah, so that's that. And, of course... Claudio has a lot of things that he does here. You have your performance pieces. I think you actually have one that you're planning on running.
Well, there are friends of mine that have asked me to give the public some idea of what I sound like in performance, so I thought I'd play an old standby just to give you folks the idea. And this particular piece is called Mud in Your Eye, and I wrote this and performed it with the famous jazz artist Jim Beckwith.
Good company.
It is about Katrina taking down New Orleans as we know it, which really still hasn't been picked back up. And I wrote it and performed it because I did not want it to be forgotten. I've since toured it all over the country, especially the Eastern Seaboard, and this is the piece. It's called Mud in Your Eye.
Mud in Your Eye. I've been keeping abreast of the storm's raging quest from a bar in the French Quarter of town. While the gales from the west were all doing their best to hail the apocalyptic Katrina aground. Now there's mud in the eye of the sailor tonight, where broken levees have leveled the shore. And with the warnings all out and the natives in flight, the Big Easy ain't easy no more. When the waters rose as high as an elephant's eye, and knives of wind ceased their cutting about, an eerie silence would sigh as the night gave a cry to the voodoo of time running out. All the souls in despair who felt abandoned by care, and whom misfortune did not allow to depart, questioned country and state in this quagmire of fate, and found it best a debatable heart. A generosity grew from much more than a few who accomplished what politicians could not. But before this was true, an unrest would ensue among the ravaged whom time had forgot. A dead body neglect from the governing sect is the talk of all our daily news. With rivers as streets and all disquieting feats, New Orleans is neck deep in her blues. It's a primitive take when your town is a lake, not to mention the neighboring states. There are strange things afloat in a hat and a coat, all abandoned to partisan traits. At Johnny White's on Bourbon Street, we drank warm beer and spooned canned meat. while Lake Pontchartrain cut a brand new loop and turned a cultural gumbo into toxic soup. It was helter-skelter in a stadium for shelter, where Americans were called refugees. They arrived in great number from a wind that drew thunder and took comfort where there was no aim to please. With a sailboat for a penthouse that drowned out the church mouse, the hurricane blew in some very sad ends. We paid for our choices with ever-weakening voices, resting far too easy on political trends. A government of the rich is a cancerous itch, and reminder that we have all sinned. Like Bob Dylan would say with his nomadic sway, the answer is blowing in the wind. A president touting religion as a special interest stool pigeon may be facing a rising of tides. Ceasing arrogance not, he may soon face his lot, in whom true power and justice resides. Chaos and creation, known as civilization, are subject to a shifting imbalance ashore. A maligned collective neglect always leads to regret. And the Big Easy ain't easy.
So we're back, right?
I think we are. Hey,
yeah.
You beat me to the punch.
Yeah.
We were just, while my stuff was playing in the background here for us, since I know it, we were talking about the whole new gun situation going on. And you had an interesting point to make there.
Well, I mean, I was just making the point that law is always at least 10 years behind technology.
Mm-hmm.
And law has to be reactionary. We don't know that there's a problem.
Politically, of course, it always happens, that reactionary aspect that you're pointing to always happens in very broad strokes that
right.
don't necessarily take everything into consideration.
We don't necessarily know that anything, no matter what it is, whether it has to do with assault weapons or gay marriage or any other controversial topic, is a problem until it's a problem. So
you can't
necessarily make a law for something you don't know about.
See, I'd been under the mistaken impression, Bill corrected me, that there were actually weapons out there that the public could obtain that were automatic. In other words, press the trigger and you can just keep shooting.
You can modify many of the semi-automatics.
So those were the weapons I'm concerned about as far as having a regular gun. I've got a rifle at home to protect myself, but
right.
So I have no problem with that. I have a problem with wartime machinery being accessible to regular
right.
Joe.
And I tend to go along with you on that
And the one point that I would want to make on just my perception of the issue, one of the reasons that a lot of Americans aren't giving up their guns is because they figure it might be the government they have to shoot someday.
Well, it could be that, but one of the problems we've got is we're addressing the wrong end of the issue.
Yeah.
If you really look at it, why do people want such things around? I don't think that we are born with the instinct of having an assault weapon hanging on the wall. But when you look at our culture, what is the big prevalent trend in movies today, for one thing? Let's just take that for a minute.
Video games for another.
Video games perhaps for another. It's the bang, bang, shoot 'em up.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you see Bruce Willis running around with all the time? An assault weapon. So you want to emulate your hero. I want an assault weapon. Not because I need it for home security. Those things are basically
good
useless.
Good Day to Die Hard. Isn't that the next one?
Yeah. You know, Live Free or Die Hard. That's,
yeah, right.
That's the one there.
The new
one
coming
up. That's fine. I mean, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have escape movies like that and so on. But frankly, I'm a gun owner. I've held guns all my life. Having one of those for home protection, all I'm going to do is destroy my home with it. You're better off with something very, very different for home protection.
I was wondering what happened to your house.
Yeah. So why do you want it? You want it only because you saw your hero with it. and especially with people who are impressionable.
Oh, it's an enticing image.
It's we're looking more at a cultural issue, not a mechanical issue. There are people who can be very responsible and own an assault weapon. I mean, if I had one, I don't, but if I did, I think I'd be responsible with it. I'm not going to go shoot up a school. I might shoot up a radio station. No, I wouldn't do that either. But there are people who are very responsible about it. But there are also people who aren't, and the reason for that is not anything to do with the weapon. It has to do with their mental state and the cultural conditioning they're under.
And again, it's they operate in very broad strokes because that's really the only political reach that's out there. Right.
We always want to fix problems by fixing technology instead of fixing culture. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the problem lies with virtually anything. It's in our culture.
In other words, more romantic comedies, please.
Well, yeah. That might help.
Or somebody redo Fawlty Towers or Monty Python. Where's the update on some of those? That was great stuff.
And I've always got the opinion, too, that artists can be a piece of this. I mean, artists in the old days, whatever, used to get mad, used to get angry. You know,
I still do. That's why I wrote the former piece.
In, what was it, 1937, 38, the Luftwaffe was participating in the Spanish Civil War, and they bombed a town in northern Spain and blew it to absolute crap. Killed women, children, babies, dogs. It was not totally a military target. Well, Picasso got angry.
Yeah.
And painted Guernica. And that's a very famous painting. Where's the Guernica over the issue with
Sandy Hook? It amazes me how numb our culture has become.
Right. Why aren't we angry about this? If we're an artist, we have a means of expression that goes beyond anyone. Why don't we use it?
Drones comes to mind. That sets me off.
Sure. There's another one. Now, that'd be a perfect subject for a poem.
Well, at some point, I'll work on something, but it's amazing that we accept this so casually. Yeah. I made a statement in my book, Seafarers, that I think applies here. And the statement is, man is his own curse, and he wears it far too casually.
Right. I mean, we can laugh about things like Botox injections for poker players and the skeet-shooting Obama doll, and that's all cultural, but it doesn't change our culture. All it does is pander to the various parts of it. What we need to do is look at changing our culture, changing our mind, changing our thinking, and we can pay lip service to it all we want. No one has yet found the way around to do it.
And what we need to do now is go to some music, because I'm depressed.
Sorry. Thank you.
I'm feeling much better now. I say, for you know, if you see some sucker out there with a submachine gun or an Uzi or whatever, walk up and give that man a joint.
Yep.
That's it. That's my take.
Yeah, tell him mellow out.
Yo. Cool it, bro.
So what are we going to do next? What are we?
I think my friend here, Bill, and his wife, who have moved, I guess they've been there for a while, to Hillsborough, had an interest in you bringing up some perspective on Hillsborough, North Carolina history.
Hillsborough is an interesting place in a lot of ways. Hillsborough was kind of like the Western capital for a long time. Like if you go back to colonial times, and that's when it had its big day. I mean, the original capital for North Carolina was New Bern. Down there along the coast, and it was just easier to get to because she could pull up a ship right next to it. In fact, they even built the only royal palace in the United States is in New Bern, North Carolina.
Didn't realize we had one.
We have the palace down there was actually built as the residence of the king in North America back in colonial days. Should he come visit, there was another one in New York, but that was torn down.
Are we talking English throne?
Yeah, we're talking English throne. On a American colonial, but so they did the main part of it from New Bern, but Hillsborough was kind of where all the business got done in the hinterlands back here away from the coast, and there were some Revolutionary War skirmishes and battles, and of course the guy that everybody knows about with Hillsborough is David Fannin. David Fannin was a Tory leader. David Fannin was an evil person in a lot of ways. He was famous.
I never did like him.
Nobody liked him. He was famous for actually bottling up. I think he was part of the North Carolina legislature, which was in session in Hillsborough, and he got them all trapped in the building that they used for meetings, nailed all the doors and windows shut, and shut the building on fire. So,
I think I liked him for that.
I tell you, you go up there and you find some of the older families who really know their history in Hillsborough and mention David Fannin, they'll spit on your shoes.
What's the story there? Did he actually kill people?
Oh, yeah, he burned them to death.
I'm sorry, I was making humor of a situation I didn't realize was that serious.
No, he burned a bunch of people to death, and he was.
What was his reason for doing that particular?
Well, he was
deed?
A Tory leader. He was just looking for the rebels of the Americas, and he would go out and just hang people summarily for stuff like this. He was absolutely
explain
notorious.
Tory leader.
Tory the Tories were the supporters of the British Crown.
I see.
During the American Revolution, things broke down into thirds. You had a third of the people who were pro-revolution. Yes, let's go for independence. Let's do that. A third of the people who were referred to as Tories, and they were saying, no, wait, we're British subjects. We should stay along this. And then we had a third that would probably be me. Who cares? I mean, I don't care. What are they? Just let me run my farm and
you wanna live
stay
here?
Out
okay.
of my way. You know, right. I mean, I want to live free or die or whatever. That's about it. You know, and that was the Tory leader, but Fannin was absolutely notorious for things like that, and everybody knows Colonel Tarleton down in South Carolina, but North Carolina had our version in David Fannin.
And Tarleton was
a British colonel of the cavalry. If you've ever seen the movie The Patriot, he was one of the principal characters portrayed in that. Not as historically accurate as he should have been, but reasonable. He was an evil kind of person too. He'd stick a sword through you as quick as look at you, and just didn't care.
What is it that with all these people that come into power, why does it always have to go in dark directions?
Hey, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. So where does that leave God? No, let's not go there. That's a little bit more than we need to go to.
It might have been God's way of starting a detonation system. You never know.
Assuming that, yeah, exactly. That may be. Did God have assault weapons? I don't know.
He's letting us play with them.
Yeah. Now let's not get into that. We're going to get everybody mad at us.
No need to stay on that subject.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's give the Apex Arts Council website one more time. And
Apex Arts Council is the right place you want to go, www.apexartscouncil.org. And you'll find the Artists for Animals Fair there. You'll find a number of other things, including our workshops now on creative writing and painting and all sorts of things.
In addition to what you discussed before with the Arts Center, what with the
Arts Council.
Arts Council, We're here in the Art
Center. We are at the Art Center, yes. That's being the Carborough Art Center.
What else do you guys do throughout the year?
Well, we run the shows. We have adult education classes in painting, basic painting. We're working on one coming up in charcoals. We have a creative writing workshop that we run every quarter. And one that we get a lot of interest is what I call the business of art. This has absolutely nothing to do with teaching you how to do art. We will not teach you to paint, write, dance, or anything else during this. We teach you how to be an artist business person. We actually come in and we have a sales professional sales manager come in and teach you how to sell your work.
So we're saying bring a suit but leave it at the door. We're going to teach you how to slip into them pants.
We have a marketing guy who owned his own marketing agency for a while who will explain how to develop your image. A CPA will come in and work through you. What are your tax exposures as an artist? And then I have a professional copyright and patents attorney will come in and spend an hour on what are your trademark rights and what are your rights in your work. If you sell a piece of art, do you still have rights in it? No. Well, actually you do, but you have to act fast if you see anything that violates those. So we'll teach that. The amazing one is one class that I've got coming up that we're still trying to build is for artists, a welding class. We've had a number of requests for people who want to do metal art, so we do those things. We have a community band.
Do you ever get any pushback on artists who really don't want to know or don't want anyone to know the business aspect of art?
I've never had that from any of the artists that I've had any I've worked with before, but I could see where that might be. We work with the University of North Carolina, NC State. I know I'm in Carborough. I shouldn't say that up here. But NC State, they actually have a class now. They're one of only three universities in the nation that run a minor in art entrepreneurship. And this is how to be an artist and run the business of being an artist, which is kind of interesting because they made it an elective and they expected this would be artists trying to figure this out. And they found that they had a lot of people coming over from the computer sciences lab because it's an art elective. And this way they get their art elective. They don't have to take classical oboe or something.
Either that or an opportunity for the MBAs or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a point. We do that. And Professor Beckman is a great guy. He's a music professor and he teaches this as well. And
I guess it's all bad until the royalty checks start coming in. And then paint or something.
But most artists I know would fall into the category of not being that interested in the business side, but still hoping to survive by what they create.
Right. But we do all sorts of things like this. We have our community band, which I mentioned, the Peak City Sound.
Hey.
We have a 20-piece R&B band that will come out and play for you. How's that?
Terrific.
And I can find a way to make it tax deductible if you want.
What, just listening?
Yeah, no. Hey, you want them to come out and play?
We have to take that class, though, I think.
I'm taking a deductible on my support. I went there and listened.
Yeah, so you just make a designated gift to the council, and we send the band out.
And how did you get involved in this?
I got involved in this. I have a degree in history, and part of it has to do with art history. Well, I never used much of it. I spent most of my career working for ship lines, international trade and transport, and then when I got here. Into North Carolina, I got involved with some companies that were doing related work in software, and I became part owner of a software company down here. Eventually, I made enough that I said, hey, what do I need to work for? And I kind of cast around for things to do, and one of the things that popped up was this Apex Arts Council. It was being organized by three people, and I ran into them at a Chamber of Commerce mixer. And we started talking, and they said, well, yeah, we want to do this, but we don't know how to go about making it a nonprofit or tax-exempt. And I've done that off and on throughout my career, And they asked me if I'd help, and suddenly I'm here, and now I'm finally getting to use my art history knowledge.
That's excellent. Where do you get most of your funding from?
We bootstrap most of it right now. We get it from revenue from shows. We get it from donations. We get it from the classes. So that's where it all comes from. We've not applied for grants yet. We're about to get into a program for that. And, of course, anybody who wants to make donations, I'd be happy to take their money.
And I might add that donations in the past, I've donated art.
Yes.
So he's not just speaking of financial donations, but also donations of things that they can sell.
And by the way, speaking of donations, WCOM can use your donations too.
You better believe it, bro.
That is very true.
Yes. This station does not exist unless you put your money into it.
So if you like what you hear and you don't think we should all leave the country, please find a way to support WCOM.
That's right. Yes. And we know that you mentioned the website several times.
Yes.
But what is the address?
The address is Post Office Box 1381, Apex, North Carolina, 27502.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the best way to get hold of things. And that's also on the website.
Okay, so. But to check out the website again, it's
www.apexartscouncil.org. apexartscouncil.org. Come on there. You can find a lot of stuff there. There's fun things.
And if you think your host, Claudio, should leave the country, you can go to www.claudioarts.com. That's CLAUDIOARTS.com. And I can catch you up on anything you might need to catch up on. Or you can just, of course, go to the podcasts of the WCOM gallery.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to wrap it up in about 4 minutes, so let's not forget anything we meant to say.
Oh, what did we meant to say here, Daniel?
I'm spoken up.
You and I had a lot of talk in the car on the way here. And
you know, I was going to give that joint to the guy with the gun, but he didn't show up.
Yeah, he said you gave it to the working girl. No, really, folks, Carver isn't like that anymore.
Are we done on Hillsborough?
Yeah,
we burned down the courthouse. So I guess
burned down the courthouse in Hillsborough. Well,
I did end up having to program about 2 hours of big band music and to make myself very popular to the folks in Carborough and Chapel Hill area. I did finish the show with Reefer Man.
All right.
Well, you know, if you're going to do big band,
I've started my show with Peter Tosh before. Legalize it.
You've got a big band leader that came from Chapel Hill, Kay Kaiser, his College of Musical Knowledge.
That's right.
He was from Chapel Hill, and everybody forgets that, and his famous song, The Three Little Fishies. You know, Three Little Fishies and the Mama Fishy, too. I used to be able to sing this.
Now, I do know in the beginning of the program you were going to read a poem here.
Oh, yes, I think from memory. Yes, the one about the camel.
Oh, that's...
Take us over the hump, would you please?
Take us over the hump. We were discussing this. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say we can end on that.
Yeah. And it just a piece of doggerel from Britain, actually, comes out of the rugby locker rooms. It's not as bad as it might seem at first, but it just talks about the sexual life of the camel is stranger than anyone thinks. At the height of the mating season, he tries to bugger the sphinx. But the sphinx's posterior sphincter is all plugged by the sands of the Nile, which accounts for the hump on the camel and the sphinx's inscrutable smile.
I've seen that smile, and I'd like to apologize for Bob Crowley. When was that one written? That's still pretty good, I guess.
I don't know when that was written, but now that I've totally destroyed my image.
Yes, indeed. That's all right. We all need to humble ourselves down, back down to the clay every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always good to know that there are no sphinxes in Nantucket.
No, there's no sphinxes in Nantucket, and that's a whole other poem that we probably shouldn't do here.
And on that note, I'm getting the sphinx out of here. Thank you, folks, for joining us. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater here on WCOM LP. Tune in again next week when I'm having a group of comedians on. Yvette Holder, a dear friend of mine, is bringing a little comedy troupe for some improv comedy I'm hoping to be a part of myself. So that's what's happening next week. Bob Crowley, thank you for being on.
You're welcome.
Bill McClymont, thank you for co-hosting, and I may call on you again. I really appreciate it. You were fun to be with. And thank you, folks, for tuning us in. Until next time, cheers.